This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Good morning, folks. We've got a great show lined up for you today. April 15th, right around the corner. Today, the deadline for filing your tax returns. Farnoosh Tarabi, personal finance expert, joins us. She'll answer questions like, what should filers keep in mind before filing their taxes? What are the most common reasons consumers delay filing their tax returns? What are the implications of same? So we'll talk through a number of different issues relative to that April 15th day and filing of your taxes. Coming out at the beginning of the 12 o'clock hour, Cheryl Landrieu, the former First Lady of the city of New Orleans, is the co-chair of the New Orleans Book Festival. It's now its fourth year of the Book Festival. It will take place March 27th through the 29th on Tulane's Uptown campus. You really want to go to the website and see some of what they have. A huge number of panel discussions with some very interesting folks, Republicans, Democrats, independents, progressives, talking about all kinds of political issues, health care, taxes, talking about food, talking about culture, talking about all kinds of different things. So many different authors, too, that are there that have published books on some very interesting conversations. And one that kind of caught my eye was that there's going to be a panel discussion between David Axelrod and Karl Rove. And the subject matter is Bridging the Divide, a bipartisan discussion on America's future. It's those kind of panel discussions I really enjoy, where you got both sides talking about it. Happen to like David Axelrod, the manner in which he presents his material, his data. Of course, I don't always agree with him, but I like listening to him. I think a lot of times he makes a lot of sense. Same with Karl Rove. It'd be, I think, a very interesting conversation. I'm sure that panel discussion will be well attended, but there's a whole bunch just like that. So you really want to check out their website, and we'll talk more about that with Cheryl at the beginning of the 12 o'clock hour. GNO Inc. is our 11 o'clock hour, like we do every Wednesday. Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc., will join us. And in the back half, he has a special guest, Joe Toomey, former Representative Joe Toomey, and also former Port of New Orleans chairman. He's been working with five different ports in the lower Mississippi system, bringing them together, collaboration, increasing the amount of communication of them. so that we can compete together against other ports. There's a new report that's out, and we'll talk to him about that new report from these five ports. The governor joins us at 10:30, and we'll discuss the upcoming March 29th ballot. That is Saturday, folks, that you get to vote. Early voting ended this past Saturday. Four very important items on the ballot, none more important than Amendment Number 2. And there's been a lot of talk about that, and I'm going to have a few more comments about that just here in a few moments leading in to the governor joining us at 10:30. I did want to announce the following, though. New Orleans & Company is going to host the first ever weekend job fest on March 29th, that is Saturday, at the Zulu Social Aid and Pleasure Club. It's the first ever weekend job fest at Zulu headquarters. More than 20 companies are prepared to conduct in-person interviews on-site, make immediate job offers. Positions are available at all levels. Every time New Orleans & Company does this, they do it right. They do it well. It's a great opportunity right there in Central City. To give you an example, the list of participating employers, Aloft Hotel, ASM Legends, those are the folks that run the Dome and all the other facilities, Cafe Reconcile, Chick-fil-A, Dickie Brennan, Felipe's Taqueria, Four Seasons Hotel, Global Parking Systems, Goodwill, Headcount, Herd Dat Kitchen, Higgins Hotel, Hilton New Orleans Hotel, Holiday Inn Downtown Superdome Hotel, Hotel Management of New Orleans, LLC, Hotel St. Vincent, Hyatt Regency, Marriott, New Orleans Marriott, New Orleans Police Department, Nopsey Hotel, the Roosevelt New Orleans Hotel, a Waldorf Astoria Hotel, and the Velvet Cactus. So you have a nice collection of companies there that will be available for you to sit down, talk to them, see what the opportunities are, job opportunities, job growth, and things of that nature. I probably know at least two-thirds, if not three-quarters, of these organizations and the folks that head them up personally. And I got to tell you, it's a great group, a great opportunity. So get on by there. It will be from 9 a.m. To 2 p.m., Zulu Social Aid and Pleasure Club, 732 North Broad Street, right there in the Central City. So there's going to be a lot of discussion. We'll talk with Governor Jeff Landry in just a few moments about Amendment 2, which appears on the ballot. That seems to be the one that has garnered the most attention. I don't want to say controversy, but there's garnered the most debate about what ultimately happens there. There was actually litigation filed saying that the language of this was somewhat misleading, only because the legislation revising Article 7 of the Louisiana State Constitution is about 115 pages long, and the ballot proposition appears with 91 words. So it doesn't really provide a lot of backdrop for what actually is ultimately going to happen here on if Amendment 2 successfully passes. So we had on folks the other day that were pro to this and Amendment Number 2 and talked about a number of things of what would ultimately happen with its passage. And we'll try to gain a better understanding when the governor comes on. But really what happens here is that one of the issues is to fix the individual income tax rate. The current constitution has it at a cap on that individual tax rate at 4.75. This amendment would reduce that 1% to 3.75. Under the new state tax law that was passed and took effect in January of 2025, Louisianans are currently paying a 3% flat rate. It used to be graduated. It used to start at 1.85, move on up, and taxable income over $100,000 was basically taxed at a rate of about 4.25%, which was less than what the current Constitution provides on, about a half a point less than the 4.75%. Moving to the flat income tax has a cost. It has a fiscal note of about $1.1 billion, maybe a little more, a little less, we're not sure, in lost revenue. What passed in the state legislature was some increasing in state sales tax to a state sales tax rate of 5% that will go through 2029, and also the scope of what you could tax was increased. So there were more goods and services that were subject, obviously, to the sales tax. I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations, still very hard without knowing what people's purchasing patterns are as to whether or not they will gain an ultimate savings or not with the reduction in state income taxes to the average normal spend of what you would see for a family in state sales taxes. It's very complicated. You never really know. Even regionally, there would be some differences. So I'm not going to quote any of those numbers because it's just really hard to figure out where we would ultimately be. But there's no doubt that we kind of transferred the funding and financing of state government, put more of that burden on sales taxes than previously, less of a burden on state income taxes. Obviously, and we'll talk about why that is when the governor joins us. I'm really kind of going through this exercise because it's just so much material, and I know that we're not going to have that much time with the governor, and it's just going to be very difficult to get all of this out. Part of the difference when you put these, one of the challenges, I should say, with when you put these caps is that it reduces the opportunities for you to do certain things. The necessity for the caps, I'm sure the governor's going to talk about that. But it really kind of limits what your options are in a downturn, in an economic downturn, and you don't have the necessary revenue to fund the services that you have in state government. In fact, the state is going to have to backfill and make up for some lost revenue as it relates to a number of different provisions within Amendment number 2. The governor and his staff actually admit that, and they say that they have a plan in place, and we'll try to find out more about what that plan is moving forward to backfill lost revenue there. The other thing that we talked about the other day with folks from PAR is, and the Pelican Institute, is the fact that this senior citizen tax deduction. So Amendment 2 will actually double your senior citizen tax deduction. Individuals age 65 and older would be entitled to an additional standard income tax deduction equal to the standard deduction for a single filer, which is $12,500. If you file jointly, right now, you have a benefit of $25,000 income tax deduction, and that would rise to a level of, I guess it would be currently, it would be $50,000. I guess it would rise to $100,000 of income that would not be taxed. The legislature could enact laws, obviously, for these property tax exemptions with a 3/4 vote of approval. Any future changes would require a 2/3 vote during even number years only, because that's the years that you can take up fiscal matter. One of the, actually is very controversial, is language in here that says existing property tax exemptions for nonprofits in the state constitution would be removed with the amendment. And the only property owned by nonprofits and used for exclusively religious purposes would remain exempt from property taxes. So if you were to think about some of the organizations that the Catholic Church owns that actually are not for an exclusive religious purpose, there are for other purposes, and it would be subject to interpretation by those within the Department of Revenue, those properties could be taxed for purposes of property tax. Nonprofits, NGOs that are not religious based, also those properties would could be taxed under this provision as well. You will recall that the city administration, not only the Cantrell administration, but many others before this mayor, have complained about the number of 501c3 organizations out there, not-for-profits, that are not paying these types of taxes. And it has become incredibly burdensome for the city to be able to backfill the services, many of which, many of these not-for-profits hold large tracts of land that require a lot of different services from the city, but they're not actually contributing to that. And so in order to get around this, we have become more of a fee-based system because of this constitutional amendment. So in some respects, it's not good for not-for-profit world, probably plus-up good for local government. Makes it a lot easier for them to collect property taxes on these properties, as well as religious organization properties that's not for the perpetuation of their religious belief and used for religious purposes. Veterans with disabilities and surviving spouses would also get an additional property tax exemption, so there's not an age limit there, which applies to the first $7,500 of assessed valuation of properties. You would be exempt on the first, an additional $7,500, which is above the $75,000 homestead exemption. Local governments obviously get to collect more sales taxes. They are able to align with what the state is doing and levy taxes on certain items, transactions that were carved out to state government only. And that actually helps local government as it relates to state sales taxes on scope of what they can actually tax on. All right, we got a couple of more that we'll talk about before we get the governor on. Let's take a break right now. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back. Stay with
us. Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original Podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
With us. Welcome back, folks. We are joined by the governor of the great state of Louisiana, Jeff Landry. Governor, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me this morning. How are things going?
Things are going well, Governor. I know you've been very busy. You've been around the state of Louisiana promoting, you know, passage of these four amendments to the Louisiana State Constitution, but none more than Amendment 2. So I'll give you an opportunity to tell the listening audience why you think Amendment Number 2 is so important.
Well, look, I think more than anything else, over the last couple of decades, we've all had our frustration with the way that our state government operated when it fell into dire fiscal needs, okay? And that we've had these starts and stops in our economy. We've seen people leave the state rather than come to the state. We've questioned why other states in the South have received new types of economic development projects, such as the automotive industry or the airline industry. We've seen places like South Carolina attract like Boeing, BMW, diversify their economy. And we scratched our head and said, well, why can't Louisiana? And last year, we worked all last year to put ourselves in a position to be able to attract those kind of projects. And we're seeing the fruits of that labor. And one of the biggest problems we've had is our tax code. And we wanted an opportunity to give our citizens a tax cut and put ourselves on a way to make it business friendly. And Amendment 2 does a lot of those things. It reduces the state income tax. It gives the state flexibility to increase funding on infrastructure by basically combining a number of the dedicated savings accounts that we have penned up and are unable to use. We use some of those savings accounts to pay down on debt, instead of moving money to New York, to New York banks in the tune of $300 million a year. We then take that money and give teachers a permanent pay raise. We double the deduction for our senior citizens, helping to keep them in our state. We do about 30% of the things we wanted to do in rewriting our Constitution to, again, create more flexibility so that we can grow our economy. I mean, like, there's really nothing, Sheriff, in the amendment that I can find is not good for somebody. And I hear all of these kind of ankle biters. We're watering down taxes for religious organizations, which is not true. We preserve the homestead exemption. This is one that you know about. I mean, look, the inventory tax is one of those taxes that has vexed me, but certainly raises revenue for our local governments. And we found a way that maybe we can get rid of the inventory tax but still be able to replace revenue for local governments as well. That's something that has not happened in Baton Rouge in a long time, where Baton Rouge is actually partnering with local government instead of giving local government unfunded mandates or taking things away from them and then trying to let them figure out how they're going to fill the treasury on that side of the equation. And so, again, I think there's so many great opportunities for us to continue the momentum that we have going here in this state. And Amendment 2 gives us greater flexibility to continue that momentum.
You mentioned flexibility a number of times, and everyone, you're right, has been completely and totally frustrated historically in a downturn economy, that there were very few options that the state legislature and administrations had in cuts. Typically, they went to education and health care. How does Amendment 2 change that?
Well, it changes our revenue structure and the way. Look, one of the things that has happened is we have dedicated ourselves into dysfunction. And by opening and combining some of those funds and streamlining the financial affairs of the state, we get to be able to look across the board and quit going to just education and health care. And I do believe that once we pass this amendment, this is going to give us the momentum for the legislature to start looking at other dedicating funding sources and saying, okay, do we have too much money in those accounts under which we can find and use that money elsewhere on needs versus wants? And it gives us the ability that when we start shifting our priorities in this state, that we're able to do that. I mean, look, we have like $1 billion in the it's like the Millennial Educational Fund. Sounds real important. Sounds like it, man, this would be great. We haven't been able to touch the money because the ability for us to pull that money out of that account is so limited based upon the priorities that we have today. And so, again, those are things that this amendment does by giving us more flexibility on top of here's the most important part. I do believe that if we pass this amendment, and there's a spending cap limit in this amendment, so there's a spending limit inside of this amendment as well for state government, that we literally could get to the point where in 2 years, we're further reducing people's income tax. The ultimate goal is to get rid of the income tax.
But doesn't that spending cap, you know, really work kind of as a smoothing coefficient? It kind of limits you more than create more flexibility, especially in a downturn economy, or in the case of what we are potentially facing relative to cuts to Medicaid and other programs coming down from the federal government that you know as well as I, 18% of our kids are on CHIP. We have an overrepresentation of folks that are on Medicaid. Any concern on your part that you're going to be a little bit handcuffed as to how we end up dealing with that? I know these dollars come down to the state. The state actually makes the rules. I just suspect that this is going to be a very difficult equation that may be headed our way in the next 8 to 9 months.
Well, I'll tell you, I think that when you place that spending limit across the board, that doesn't allow the agencies that we normally are not able to restrain when we get in dire fiscal positions, that those agencies are not as bloated as they would have been without the spending limit. I think that what we're doing, especially running this fiscal responsibility project and finding efficiencies in government, which we should consistently run. You know, I think that is another
no doubt.
Problem that we've had is that we take our eye off the ball, and because the money comes in, and then when the money doesn't come in, we just say, oh, we could just cut healthcare and education, and we don't go back and look. Like, I'll give you an example. Just the other day, they gave me an inventory. We got 32,000 printers in the state that the state owns. Now, and the reason that I say that is because 8 years ago as Attorney General, when I went in, everyone in the Attorney General's office had a printer on their desk. It drives me crazy. As someone who worked in a law office before, in a pretty large office, we didn't get our own printers. You went over there, you had a network printer, you punched your code in, you printed your stuff, your copy, it was all right there. I mean, we reduced the cost of that office by simply reducing the amount of printers that we were purchasing. Just the things that normal businesses do that streamline their offices, the state has a bad habit of not doing. And those are things that we're looking into right now as we're looking to build flexibility. I will tell you this about the Medicare side and the Medicaid side. Look, we know that when we improve our rankings in the tax foundation, the average means income of a family starts to rise. There's a demonstrable difference, a clear difference between those at the bottom of the tax foundation score, which we were in, and those at the top, which is where we're headed. And every time we lift, that means income, that means less, that means we're moving more people from dependence to independence. And right now, we've got $50 billion worth of investment construction projects getting ready to happen in our state. That has never happened before. When you look at the new steel plant that we just announced, the average salary of that inside that steel mill when it's open is $95,000 a year. The Meta plant up in Richland, I think it's 80-something thousand. I mean, that's how you lift people out of poverty and you take them from dependence to independence. And so for voters out there, if you've been frustrated and you want an opportunity to bring those jobs in, then that amendment is a big signal to boardrooms, not only in the United States, but around the world, that Louisiana's tax policy is going to be both business friendly and friendly for our citizens as well, because everybody gets a tax cut.
So you are confident that these trust funds that are kind of going to change, the interest is what has been spent on any number of programs, whether it's early childhood education or otherwise. You know, a lot of these dollars are going away, some of which you're going to move in order to accommodate the stipend for teachers in local government budgets, that there's going to be space within the existing budget to make up these differences in the time of the downturns? Because, you know, you know as well as I, the monies that went into those trust funds are when we hit economic boom years where things were great. Oil was at a price that it never achieved before. And there was an amount that would go into there over and above a triggering number to a certain limit in order to kind of be a smoothing coefficient for those years that maybe the following year oil dropped, and it did. Natural gas, same thing, right? I mean, very volatile through any number of decades that we look at historically. But you're convinced that by growth alone within the state of Louisiana, we'll be able to overcome those challenges.
Well, two things, not just growth alone, but both growth alone and a change in tax policy. So let's look at what we did in the last session. We got rid of the corporate franchise tax. We lowered the corporate income tax. We lowered, and we can guarantee the lowering of our personal income tax with a vote yes on Saturday. And what we did is we started to remove some of the exemptions from the sales tax. And then, of course, we ended up with an increase in the sales tax. So what we did was we quit taxing people's labor and we started taxing choices, their consumption. Okay, and let me tell you the difference between those two in the long run. What you have found is one of the things that has driven our up and down cycles is the reliance both on oil and gas, which we had done in the past, but that has waned over the last probably 15 years. Okay, mm-hmm. And instead we've propped ourselves up on those income taxes. And what has happened is that when you end up in a recession or the stock market, specifically the stock market starts to fall, then what happens is corporate income taxes fall and personal income taxes fall. But the one thing that stays constant is some consumption. And so what happens is that you actually start to flatten that out. You actually start to leveling it out, as you said earlier, because your revenue is based on consumption rather than the volatility of the income tax. Because we all know corporate income. I mean, think about all the exceptions that corporations, they pay income tax. By the time they're paying income tax, they have written off all kind of things. They look for any way in the world not to pay those things. We do the same thing on our personal income tax forms as well.
It's and a tax avoidance system.
That's exactly right. So by changing the way that we raise revenue for the services that our citizens need, we stabilize the overall budget of the state. Those are all things that we get to do inside of this amendment because it complements the work that we already did in November that we could do statutorily. Look, I was doing an interview earlier, and I said, look, there's no doubt that the legislature, overwhelmingly because two-thirds of them voted for this amendment, would have made these changes had we not put this obstacle in front of them in a constitution somewhere behind us. You know, we've talked about it again and again that our constitution has been amended like 329 times. You know, it's like, and the other thing that's important is that this amendment doesn't delete any laws. It doesn't take off the books anything that's inside of the current Constitution. It simply moves those things from the Constitution into a superset of statutes that require a two-thirds vote. So, again, that's important. It's like the amount of words that we're scrubbing out of Article 7 don't disappear. They end up in statute, of which the way to amend those would require a two-thirds vote. So there's still an extra layer of protection for those things that people may say, well, I don't know if I want the legislature to be able to amend these things by a simple majority. They don't have to worry. It's a two-thirds vote for us to get there anyhow. That was the whole debate that we had last year in wanting to rewrite a large section of the Constitution. We didn't want to take things out of the Constitution and throw them in the trash can. We just wanted to place them into a superset of statutes so that the legislature could have the flexibility to do it by two-thirds vote if times changed and priorities changed, which we have seen over the years.
Yeah, I don't disagree with your observations on that point. My concern always has been is that a lot of what you just mentioned are all revenue reductions to the state of Louisiana. And local government is oftentimes has to bear the responsibility of looking at what the increased costs in the delivery of services are and whether or not their tax base is adequate at that point in time. And if not, one of the options is a sales tax, which we can't go much higher. So that, for all intents and purposes, is eliminated. And it comes down to rolling the millage forward and increase of property taxes. And it's just going to be interesting. I mean, in theory, a lot of this makes sense. In practice, I'm not so sure. I think you would agree. There's still some unanswered questions. But how do we fund and finance this increase in the cost of goods that and services that are provided for by not only state government, but local government? And I think that's where the rubber is going to meet the road, where we're going to have some really difficult decisions, conversations about how we fund and finance certain things. I mean, if you just look at what happened, Governor, in the city of New Orleans, and although we don't want to hold them up as the most efficient city government in the state by any stretch of the imagination. But here we are, we get FEMA money, we delay in the execution, we don't have the ability to receive the money, which means we can act on it. We delay, and now we're $800 million in the hole.
Well, listen, I agree. But here's the one thing I'll tell you. Nothing that we're trying to do is completely experimental. We have looked at other states that have been successful and looked at those tax structures and said, they have been able to live within their means, provide the services, grow their economies based upon that tax policy. And that's what the tax foundation, that's why we use the tax foundation as a litmus test. So it's not like we're going out there and like.
Yeah, but a lot of those, you would agree, were growing economies before they made this change, right?
No. North Carolina was not a blowing economy before they started making those changes. Neither was South Carolina, by the way. I would venture to say that most of the southern states were struggling. Florida was probably, or Texas was the outliers on them. But we've seen states that were comparable to us, both demographically and from a means income standpoint, that 20 or 30 years ago we were on par with, that seemed to move ahead of us light years in where they are today. And so I think I get it. There is uncertainty. Okay. But if we're,
and there's no perfect, system.
Right. You're right. And if we're committed to continually to change and to work together, here's the one thing I will tell you that I think I'm very proud of. And I think if you talk to your former colleagues and some of the past presidents, we worked at the table with local government, which I think really didn't happen before, because there was a lot of distrust between the state and local government because of the things that you just said. And so we're trying to work with them at the table to make sure that we elevate everybody's ability to meet the services that we're providing.
Yes.
Equally.
And I've heard that from many of the local officials that they've had a seat at the table and able to articulate their concerns. Governor, I know you got to go. Thank you so much for joining us. We've gone break free here for about 25 minutes and they're screaming at me.
I'm sorry. Thank you so much. Please
don't apologize. The people want to hear from you. And trust me, they really appreciate the fact that you are willing to come on and talk about these issues, and we are as well. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. Take care. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. That's the Governor Jeff Landry for the great state of Louisiana. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. All right, folks, we want to thank the governor for joining us. Obviously, these amendments are very important to his agenda moving forward as in advance of the next legislative session. While we were in the midst of our discussion, NOLA.com released their recommendations. Amendment number one related to attorney discipline in specialty courts, they recommend voting no. Amendment number two, the one we were just discussing, they recommend voting no. Amendment number three, which would give the ability to the state legislature to enhance the number of crimes that juveniles could be charged with under the age of 17, they recommend voting no. Amendment number four, changing the timing requirements for filling judicial vacancies, they recommend voting yes on number four. We'll be right back. Stay with us.